Welcome. Tonight we start chapter 19 in the Life Divine, out of the sevenfold ignorance towards the sevenfold knowledge. Originally, this was chapter 39 in the Arya, published on 15 December 1917. If you remember, the 38th chapter in the Arya was called The Ascent and Its Downward Eye. In the Arya, this chapter was called The Ascent Out of the Ignorance. He's retitled it, and he's brought forward here the significance of the number seven, which in ancient India, Sri Aurobindo feels, substantiated in numerical form the reality of all the universe that we meet with our senses, with our life energies, with our mind, and those portions of existence which lie beyond, yet undiscovered, not yet evolved. You'll remember the earlier chapter, the sevenfold cord of being. Sri Aurobindo spent a good bit of time depicting for us there. In chapter 27 in the book 1 of the Life Divine, the nature of these seven. Now again, he's come to address the sevenfold cord of being, but in terms of releasing the secrets of each fold of ignorance, each inclusion, as it moves upwards into a complete manifestation. Let's begin. The first citation is from the Mahopanishad. Seven steps, sapta, has the ground of the ignorance. Seven steps has the ground of the knowledge. Suggesting with that this mystic seven, while apparently being in ignorance, is really a sublime profundity and conceals within it the scope of knowledge. The Mahopanishad is really a Vaishnava text. It's fairly recent. It's not ancient, but this next piece from the 10th mandala of the Rig Veda is pretty old. He found the vast thought with seven heads, sapta shirshnim, that is born of the truth, ritra prajatam, the seven heads that come out of a true consciousness represent the true creation, the truth of creation too, the sterling motivation that's behind the manifestation of all the grades of the cosmos, seen and unseen. He created some fourth world, Turiyam, and became universal, Vishwa Janyaha. The sons of heaven, here he's talking about Dyao, of the superlative realm of the vast mental consciousness, you might even say, the overmind consciousness, the heroes of the omnipotent. This is the old sense of the word of the Asura. Here he intones in the Veda, does this Rishi, the Asura. The sons of heaven, the heroes of the omnipotent, thinking the straight thought, giving voice to the truth, founded the plane of illumination, and conceived the first abode of the sacrifice. So first, out of this truth consciousness comes the establishment of this primary altar which receives the sacrifice. This is the first. The master of wisdom, Brihaspati, cast down the stone defenses and called to the herds of light. Now we've shifted. First, the citation was talking about the supreme planes of existence, where there's all this world of light and truth creation. And now he's back looking at the stones which are below, the stone defenses. The herds of light are somewhere within those stones. The herds that stand in the secrecy on the bridge over the falsehood between two worlds, below and one above. Desiring light, jyoti, in the darkness, tamasi, he brought upward the ray herds and uncovered from the veil the three worlds. This is the action of Brihaspati, the creator God, who with the power, the vast power of the truth word, brings all into creation. And by summoning the truth from the creation, causes the herds of the light, now lost in darkness, to come up, to rise out, to answer to his call. He shattered the city that lies hidden in ambush and cut the three out of the ocean. So in other words, brought the manifestation out of the inconscient where it's been ambushed by a somnolent state in which the universe has forgotten what it is. So he rescues it from that and carves out of this primordial ocean of being the three that we know. The world of matter, the world of life, the world of mind. And then, and discovered the dawn, Ushasam, and the sun, Suryam, and the light, and the word of light. So here, Brihaspati has, through the force of the truth consciousness, compelled the rays of light, the cows, who have been lost in the fields of darkness, to come out. This is the call from above that begins the process of evolution. And the cows, as they emerge, stand forth and are seen, become visible. Finally, this third citation is from a still older book in the Rig Veda, the fourth. The hymn is also to Brihaspati. The master of wisdom, in his first coming to birth in the supreme ether of the great light, Parame Vyoman, many his births, seven his mouths of the word, seven his rays, scatters the darknesses with his cry. In a later tradition, the Tantric, we think it is at least somewhat later, there is, of course, this idea of the Vaksiddhi. Instinct in the great word is power to fulfill itself. Here in the Rig Veda, we see this from the master of wisdom, Brihaspati, the father of all this power. When he speaks, truth must manifest. And he calls from plane to plane, greater and greater effulgences of light to stand forth, to reveal themselves, to commingle, to create a harmonic cosmos. So now I think we can begin Sri Aurobindo's magnificent essay. out of the sevenfold ignorance towards the sevenfold knowledge. All evolution is, in essence, a heightening of the force of consciousness in the manifest being, so that it may be raised into the greater intensity of what is still unmanifest, from matter into life, from life into mind, from the mind into the spirit. It is this that must be the method of our growth from a mental into a spiritual and supramental manifestation, out of a still half-animal humanity into a divine being and a divine living. There must be achieved a new spiritual height, wideness, depth, subtlety, intensity of our consciousness, of its substance, its force, its sensibility, an elevation, expansion, plasticity, integral capacity of our being, and an assumption of mind in all that is below mind into that larger existence. In a future transformation, the character of the evolution, the principle of evolutionary process, although modified, will not fundamentally change, but on a vaster scale and in a liberated movement, royally continue. A change into a higher consciousness or state of being is not only the whole aim and process of religion, of all higher ascesis, of yoga, but it is also the very trend of our life itself, the secret purpose found in the sum of its labor. The principle of life in us seeks constantly to confirm and perfect itself on the planes of mind, vitality, and body which it already possesses. But it is self-driven also to go beyond and transform these gains into means for the conscious spirit to unfold in nature. And you are all familiar with his great mantra from the synthesis of yoga. All life is yoga. This states it again in terms of his philosophic creed. Let's read that again. The principle of life in us seeks constantly to confirm and perfect itself on the planes of mind, vitality, and body, which it already possesses. But it is self-driven also to go beyond and transform these gains into means for the conscious spirit to unfold in nature. If it is merely some part of ourselves, intellect, heart, will, or vital desire self, which, dissatisfied with its own imperfection and with the world, strives to get away from it to a greater height of existence, content to leave the rest of the nature to take care of itself or to perish, then such a result of total transformation would not eventuate, or at least would not eventuate here. But this is not the integral trend of our existence. There is a labor of nature in us to ascend with all our self into a higher principle of being than it has yet evolved here. But it is not her whole will in this ascension to destroy herself in order that that higher principle may be exclusively affirmed by the rejection and extinction of nature, to heighten the force of consciousness until it passes from a mental, vital, and physical instrumentation into the essence and power of the spirit is the indispensable thing, but that is not the sole object or all the thing to be done. In other words, yes, we must pass from one grade to another. We must outgrow the confines of matter and become the living being. We must outgrow life as we come to know it and cognize, conceive, aspire to something greater. We must become mental, and we must also leave the province of mind behind and climb into the pure realms of the spirit. But as we climb at each state, we don't reject the former. We insist on incorporation, not simply aggregation, but synthesis, not simply synthesis, but transformation. And greater and greater powers of transformation come with greater and greater grades of consciousness. So as we move from mind to supermind, we reject still less. The world beneath. If mind says to live in pure mentality, I have to slough off the demands of life and body, this is not the supramental intent, but rather to hold, to grasp, to possess, to succeed in the truest sense in integrating spirit and matter. Our call must be to live on a new height in all of our being. We have not, in order to reach that height, to drop back our dynamic parts into the indeterminate stuff of nature and abide by this liberating loss and a blissful quiescence of the spirit. That can always be done, and it brings a great repose and freedom. But what nature herself attends from us is that the whole of what we are should rise into the spiritual consciousness and become a manifest and manifold power of the spirit. An integral transformation is the integral aim of the being in nature. This is the inherent sense of her universal urge of self-transcendence. It is for this reason that the process of nature is not confined to a heightening of herself into a new principle. The new height is not a narrow, intense pinnacle. It brings with it a widening and establishes a larger field of life in which the power of the new principle may have sufficient play and room for its emergence. This action of elevation and expansion is not confined to an utmost possible largeness in the essential play of the new principle itself. It includes a taking up of that which is lower into the higher values. The divine or spiritual life will not only assume into itself the mental, vital, physical life transformed and spiritualized, but it will give them a much wider and fuller play than was open to them so long as they were living on their own level. Our mental, physical, vital existence need not be destroyed by our self-exceeding, nor are they lessened and impaired by being spiritualized. They can and do become much richer, greater, more powerful, and perfect. In their divine change, they break into possibilities which in their unspiritualized condition could not be practicable or imaginable. So Sri Aurobindo has granted here the value of the spiritual release into a consciousness above. But he insists that as we quest from plane to plane, we can integrate and reclaim and release new and hidden energies which lead to a greater and richer existence, even in the terms of the life which we seem to have left behind. We do not, in reaching to the supramental, leave behind rejected mind, life, and body. But all these agencies are accorded more power, more freedom, because they are released from their own ignorances. The walls of the mind, sublated into the light of the supramental, are dissolved. The limits of the life force, opened to divine potency, are supercharged. The body itself, made plastic and open to the play of the spirit, becomes conterminous with the universe and becomes a play of the universe in the individual form. So all that we fear in a change into a divine consciousness, because the limited always fears the limitless, is for no reason, because all these parts of our being will be greatened, not annulled. They won't be erased. They won't be put into little cabins where they have to behave. No, instead, they will laugh surcharged with delight, to borrow a phrase from Sri Aurobindo. Let's look at this next paragraph then. This evolution, this process of heightening and widening and integralization, is in its nature a growth and an ascent out of the sevenfold ignorance into the integral knowledge. The crux of that ignorance is the constitutional. So the first ignorance is constitutional, and now he defines it. It resolves itself into a manifold ignorance of the true character of our becoming, an unawareness of our total self, of which the key is a limitation by the plane we inhabit and by the present predominant principle of our nature. The plane we inhabit is the plane of matter. The present predominant principle in our nature is the mental intelligence with the sense mind, which depends upon matter as its support and pedestal. As a consequence, the preoccupation of the mental intelligence and its powers with the material existence as it is shown to it through the senses, and with life as it has been formulated in a compromise between life and matter, is a special stamp of the constitutional ignorance. So we're grounded in matter, sort of have our face in it, and don't really recall that which we truly are in our essence. Nor does this compromise arranged between life and matter so that life can at least exist in some way by conceding ranges of its power, what it might quest for, to the limitations of material form. This constitutes our first ignorance and is the constitutional. This natural materialism, or materialized vitalism, he continues, this clamping of ourselves to our beginnings is a form of self-restriction, narrowing the scope of our existence, which is very insistent on the human being. It is a first necessity of his physical existence, but is afterwards forged by a primal ignorance into a chain that hampers his every step upwards. The attempt to grow out of this limitation of the wholeness, power, and truth of the spirit by the materialized mental intelligence, and out of this subjection of the soul to material nature, is the first step towards a real progress of our humanity. For our ignorance is not entire. It is a limitation of consciousness. It is not the complete nescience, which is the stamp of the same ignorance in purely material existences, those which have not only matter for their plane, but matter for their dominant principle. Remember, our dominant principle is the mental. It is a partial, a limiting, a dividing, and very largely a falsifying knowledge. Out of that limitation and falsification, we have to grow into the truth of our spiritual being. This preoccupation with life and matter is at the beginning right and necessary, because the first step that man has to take is to know and possess this physical existence as well as he can by applying his thought and intelligence to such experience of it as his sense mind can give to him. But this is only a preliminary step, and if we stop there, we've made no real progress. We are where we were and have gained only more physical elbow room to move about in and more power for our mind to establish a relative knowledge and an insufficient and precarious mastery, and for our life desire to push things about and jostle and hustle around amid the throng of physical forces and existences. The utmost widening of a physical objective knowledge, even if it embraced the most distant solar systems and the deepest layers of the earth and sea, and the most subtle powers of material substance and energy, is not the essential gain for us, not the one thing which it is most needful for us to acquire. That is why the gospel of materialism, in spite of the dazzling triumphs of physical science, proves itself always in the end a vain and helpless creed. And that too is why physical science itself, with all its achievements, though it may accomplish comfort, can never achieve happiness and fullness of being for the human race. Our true happiness lies in the true growth of our whole being, in a victory throughout the total range of our existence, in mastery of the inner as well as and more than the outer, the hidden as well as the overt nature. Our true completeness comes not by describing wider circles on the plane where we began, but by transcendence. It is for this reason that after the first necessary foundation in life and matter, we have to heighten our force of consciousness, deepen, widen, subtilize it. We must first liberate our mental selves and enter into a freer, finer, and nobler play of our mental existence. For the mental is much more than the physical, our true existence. Because we are, even in our instrumental or expressive nature, predominantly mind and not matter, mental much rather than physical beings. That growth into the full mental being is the first transitional movement towards human perfection and freedom. It does not actually perfect. It does not liberate the soul. But it lifts us one step out of the material and vital absorption and prepares the loosening of the hold of the ignorance. Now, you probably are remembering the phrase in the Upanishad where en route to the larger spiritual knowledge, the Vedantic knowledge in which one, the subject, becomes one with Brahman, the supreme truth of being. That this being is described as mind, the leader of the life and the body. We have come this far, manifesting the mind, mentalizing our life is a great growth forward. It is not the culmination. We have to vault beyond it into the true spiritual consciousness and come back and claim the whole of the being, mind, life, and body, for the realm of the spirit. But if we didn't first make this transition out of animality into the mental status, that farther step into the spiritual would be impossible. And so even here, stationed as we are in the cloudy consciousness of the mind, it's still true that so much of life below us aspires to gain access to this mental status. There's an upward curve in all of evolving nature and pointing at the full manifestation of mind, because it is a necessary achievement to reach the full manifestation of the soul and its powers. In all creatures, the soul is preparing its ultimate manifestation. And a harmony with that in which it lives, individually and vastly, cosmically. But to gain this mental state must first be achieved. So, although we speak about it in terms often of its ignorance and its limitation, to have got to this point is a great victory, and one ought not to waste it by saying it is a sham, it is an artifice, it is half of you. Let us go back to where we came from and live a rich, vital life. No, that is falling back. That is not evolution. That's retrogressive. We must move forwards and upwards into a more inclusive and comprehensive consciousness. Let's try one more paragraph. Our gain in becoming more perfect mental beings is that we get to the possibility of a subtler, higher, and wider existence, consciousness, force, happiness, and delight of being, Satchit-ananda. In proportion as we rise in the scale of mind, a greater power of these things comes to us. Our mental consciousness acquires for itself at the same time more vision and power and more subtlety and plasticity, and we are able to embrace more of the vital and physical existence itself, to know it better, to use it better, to give it nobler values, a broader range, a more sublimated action, an extended scale, higher issues. Man is, in his characteristic power of nature, a mental being. But in the first steps of his emergence, he is more of the mentalized animal, preoccupied, like the animal, with his bodily existence. He employs his mind for the uses, interests, desires of the life and the body as their servant and minister, not yet as their sovereign and master. So when mind first manifests, those are our bosses. We've made all these compromises with body and with life, but we have some mind, and we turn it towards their satisfaction. But we will become sovereign and master. It is, as he grows in mind, and in proportion as his mind asserts its selfhood and independence against the tyranny of life and matter, that he grows in stature. So we struggle, we wrestle with this, and we begin to gain the upper hand. We can begin to govern and control. On one side, mind, by its emancipation, controls and illumines the life and physicality. On the other, the purely mental aims, occupations, pursuits of knowledge begin to get a value. The mind, liberated from a lower control and preoccupation, introduces into life a government, an uplifting, a refinement, a finer balance and harmony. The vital and physical movements are directed and put into order, transformed even as far as they can be by a mental agency. They are taught to be the instruments of reason and obedient to an enlightened will, an ethical perception, and an aesthetic intelligence. The more this can be accomplished, the more the race becomes truly human, a race of mental beings. And we will put our bookmark there and continue with the ideal intellectual achievements that the Greeks offered to humanity. When next we meet, a Sunday from now, so perhaps a look at the larger scope which Sri Aurobindo has put into poetic imagery in Savitri would be appropriate. Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, Canto 3, The Yoga of the Soul's Release. A glimpse was caught of things forever unknown. The letters stood out of the unmoving word. In the immutable nameless origin was seen emerging as from fathomless seas the trail of the ideas that made the world, and sown in the black earth of nature's trance, the seed of the spirit's blind and huge desire, from which the tree of cosmos was conceived and spread its magic arms through a dream of space. Immense realities took on a shape. There looked out from the shadow of the unknown, the bodiless namelessness that saw God born, and tries to gain from the mortal's mind and soul a deathless body and a divine name. The immobile lips, the great surreal wings, the visage masked by superconscient sleep, the eyes with their closed lids that see all things, appeared of the architect who builds in trance. The original desire born in the void peered out. He saw the hope that never sleeps, the feet that run behind a fleeting fate, the ineffable meaning of the endless dream. Hardly for a moment glimpsed, viewless to mind, as if a torch held by a power of God, the radiant world of the everlasting truth glimmered like a faint star bordering the night above the golden overmind's shimmering ridge. Even were caught, as through a cunning veil, the smile of love that sanctions the long game, the calm indulgence and maternal breasts of wisdom suckling the child laughter of chance, silence the nurse of the Almighty's power, the omniscient hush, womb of the immortal word, and of the timeless, the still brooding face, and the creative eye of eternity. The inspiring goddess entered a mortal's breast, made there her study of divining thought and sanctuary of prophetic speech, and sat upon the tripod seat of mind. All was made wide above, all lit below. In darkness' core she dug out wells of light. On the undiscovered depths imposed a form, lent a vibrant cry to the unuttered vasts, and through great shoreless, voiceless, starless breadths bore earthward fragments of revealing thought hewn from the silence of the ineffable. A voice in the heart uttered the unspoken name, a dream of seeking thought wandering through space, entered the invisible and forbidden house. The treasure was found of a supernal day. In the deep subconscient glowed her jewel lamp. Lifted, it showed the riches of the cave where, by the miser traffickers of sense, unused, guarded beneath night's dragon paws, in folds of velvet darkness draped they sleep, whose priceless value could have saved the world. A darkness carrying morning in its breast looked for the eternal wide returning gleam, awaiting the advent of a larger ray and rescue of the lost herds of the sun. In a splendid extravagance of the waste of God, dropped carelessly in creation's spendthrift work, left in the chantiers of the bottomless world, and stolen by the robbers of the deep, the golden shekels of the eternal lie, hoarded from touch and view and thought's desire, locked in blind antres of the ignorant flood, lest men should find them and be even as gods. A vision lightened on the viewless heights, a wisdom illumined from the voiceless depths, a deeper interpretation greatened truth, a grand reversal of the night and day. All the world's values changed, heightening life's aim. A wiser word, a larger thought came in than what the slow labor of human mind can bring. A secret sense awoke that could perceive a presence and a greatness everywhere. The universe was not now this senseless whirl, born round inert on an immense machine. It cast away its grandiose, lifeless front, a mechanism no more or work of chance, but a living movement of the body of God. Namaste. Jai Ma.